Good afternoon. Welcome to the Critical Hour. We're coming to you from the capital of the United States of America, Washington, D.C., here on Radio Sputnik. I'm your host, political scientist, author, and nationally syndicated columnist, Dr. Wilmer Leon. I'm joined here by my co-host, political analyst, Garland Nixon.
Thank you, Wilmer.
For the next 2 hours, we will explore and analyze the salient news stories that are impacting the global village in which we live. Well, Garland and I see this as being a pretty big story. Xi and Lavrov reaffirms China's emphasis on partnership with Russia. Chinese President Xi Jinping met with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov today in Beijing. Chinese analysts said the meeting sends a strong signal that China will firmly develop its strategic partnership with Russia, despite pressure from the West. The China-Russia partnership continues to be key for the global strategic balance and the hope for promoting a multipolar world in which countries of the global South will have greater roles to play. For insight into this, let's turn to our first guest. He's a lawyer and journalist based in Montreal, Canada, and Kalamata, Greece, Dimitri Laskaris. Dimitri, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to join you today.
So it's reported that the partnership continues to be key for the global strategic balance and the hope for promoting a multipolar world in which countries of the global South will have greater roles to play. Quote, China and Russia will not target any third party, but if hegemonic forces threaten China and Russia or threaten world peace, China and Russia will stand together and fight to protect their own interests and safeguard world peace together. This is from Li Haidong, a professor at the China Foreign Affairs University. Dimitri, with the Secretary of Treasury Yellen just leaving a meeting in China, and then to have not only this meeting take place, but this statement take place, what signals does that send to you?
Well, there's the timing of announcements such as these tells you a lot. And I think it would be useful for us to look at other things that have gone on within the past few weeks, not just that rather amusing attempt by Yellen to impose the U.S. government's will on China. But we have seen some very, very provocative attacks upon Russia and areas controlled by Russia in the Ukraine war within the last few weeks. We saw, of course, the horrible terror attack in Moscow, and the Russian Federation seems convinced that the Ukrainian government played a key role in that attack, and that its backers in the United States and Britain particularly had some kind of role to play in that particular atrocity. We had an attack on the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant. And of course, we have this ongoing drama with little Napoleon in France, Emmanuel Macron talking about sending a couple of thousand French soldiers to their death in Odessa. And all of this could very well be interpreted, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if it has been interpreted by both the Russian and Chinese governments as an attempt to provoke Russia into a direct attack on a NATO country. Potentially, that's what's going on, so that the U.S. or other NATO powers will have a pretext to intervene directly in the Ukraine war at a moment when Ukraine is effectively collapsing on the battlefield. So I think however they interpret all of these very, very provocative and dangerous acts by the Ukrainian military intelligence services and their backers, I think they're sending a message that China will have the back of Russia if this escalates. And no one should have any illusions about that. And another interesting aspect of this is that Lavrov, when he talked about entering into a dialogue in the last couple of days with a view to enhancing the security architecture in areas that are of importance to China and Russia, he referred to it as a new Eurasian, or enhancing the Eurasian security architecture. And I think that China may be sending a signal that it regards what happens in Europe, particularly in Eastern Europe, as a matter of strategic importance to the country of China. And again, I think that's related to what is going on in the bigger picture, on the, and particularly on the battlefield. They see, I believe, that there is a series of escalations happening here, and there are no adults in the room, and they need to send an unequivocal signal that China will have Russia's back in the event this escalates out of control.
You know, also, you know, and from a more direct perspective, the U.S. is building bases in Finland. You know, the U.S. is building bases in the Arctic, building bases all around Russia. They're now making the Romanian base, you know, one of the largest or the largest base in Europe. So they're increasing their presence on the Russian border. Meanwhile, they're building some $400 million base on the island of Yap. They're increasing their presence in Japan, and they've got soldiers now on the Kinmen Islands, you know, barely a kilometer or two from the Chinese mainland. The U.S. is so aggressive at this point, at a time when it's tied up in West Asia with the Gaza conflict. It's acting so irrational, and it is being so assertive and aggressive on the borders of both of these major world powers. To me, I don't see an alternative for them other than this. It just seems very rational in the context of the aggressiveness that's being pushed towards them. Dmitry.
Precisely. I think that they are being forced. Not that I think either of them has reservations about the necessity or wisdom of doing this, but effectively, Western powers are forcing them to perpetually increase the strength of their alliance and to make it multifaceted, a military, economic, political. They're acting in sync with each other, for example, the United Nations. Each one understands that in order for them to be secure, they need the other. China and needs Russia's resources, its military technologies. Russia needs the markets of China and the industrial base of China, the world's largest industrial base, and that together they form an indomitable force vis-a-vis the West. And the West, the best the West can hope for, frankly, is to remain competitive at this stage. When you have this multifaceted partnership between Russia and China, that's the best possible outcome for the West. And the Chinese and Russian leaderships, I think, understand this perfectly well. And every day, Western governments are acting in a way which make this partnership even more compelling to the Russian and Chinese governments.
I think it's also important to, and you touched on this, two things. One, to underscore the word Eurasia. And what does that mean? Because that, in my opinion, and I think Arlen and I discussed this earlier, that pulls in North Korea. We're talking China. We're talking North Korea. We're talking Russia. I think we're talking Iran. That pulls in a number of players. We can look at the BRICS organization and the BRICS countries. Some of them aren't going to be Eurasian, but in the broader scope of that statement, talking about defending world peace, that brings a whole lot of players into the game. And I also want to get your take on a piece that we have here, more Russian liquefied natural gas being exported to Europe than Asia. What signal does that send to you? And because today I was listening to Lloyd Austin and the head of the Joint Chiefs in the Senate. And they were talking about Russia's oil production and what that's doing for Russia. And they were even bantering about striking oil refineries. I know that's a lot, but go with it where you want to go with it.
Well, as somebody who formerly was actively involved in Green Party politics in Canada, I shake my head in disbelief every day when I see these numbers about LNG purchases, not just from Russia, but also from the United States. You know, leading the charge in Europe for the escalation of this war and the prolongation of this war were the finance minister, Robert Habeck, and the foreign minister of Germany, Annalena Baerbock, who are the titular or the effective leaders of the German Green Party, the most, I think, politically significant Green Party in the world. This is a party which is supposed to be committed not just a peace. That is one of the six core values of the Green Party on paper. And they've definitely made a travesty of that. But it's, of course, supposed to be committed first and foremost to ecological preservation. And LNG is not only much more expensive than pipeline gas, which was coming through Nord Stream, for example, but it's also much more polluting. So their policy of cutting off the flow of piped gas from Russia to Germany and to other parts of Europe has effectively compelled them to do two things, which are disastrous, both from an environmental, according to their own, you know, their own orthodoxy, from an environmental perspective and from an economic perspective. They now have to import both from Russia and the United States, not just from Russia, increased amounts of LNG, whereas they would have been better off from both an economic and an environmental perspective by preserving the pipeline gas supplies through Russia. So there, again, I can't stress this enough. In Western halls of power, there are no adults in the room whatsoever. They are acting in ways that are profoundly contrary, not only to their own constituents, but also to their own political orthodoxy. What more can be said about this? I mean, I don't know how these people aren't embarrassed to, you know, to even purport to be environmentalists or to purport to be competent in economic management. They've clearly failed miserably on both counts.
Dimitri, the bottom line is, and we're starting to see it, you know, we've seen it in Slovakia elections, we've seen it with George Galloway, that there will be a price to pay. Right now, they seem to be getting away with it, but I suspect that there will be significant movement in whether to the right or left. You know, people are arguing in some instances it's to the right. If you look at Slovakia, if you look at Galloway, it's been to the left, who knows? But I think there will be significant political movement away from the parties that have dragged the European continent into this Ukrainian disaster. Your thoughts?
Absolutely. There's a massive, I mean, it's already begun. There's a massive political reckoning coming. In Canada, for example, although the alternative being put forward to Canadians, the character by the name of Pierre Poilievre of the Canadian Conservative Party, who is a bloodthirsty neocon, you know, although he's probably worse than Justin Trudeau. At this point, Justin Trudeau's approval ratings are at rock bottom. I mean, you know, the guy can't show his face in public without being mocked and heckled by people on both the right and the left. And you're seeing this happen in France. I saw recently that a poll done by Gallup, I believe it was, showed that 82% of French believe that France is heading in the wrong direction. Of all the countries in this international poll that Gallup did, the lowest level of confidence in the direction of the country was in France, which, of course, has been one of the primary architects of this disastrous neocon policy in Ukraine. So we're seeing already that the political days of these characters are all numbered. And the real question that we have to confront as citizens of the West is, do we have an actual, competent, ethical, and principled alternative to these people? I don't know that we do. But one thing is for sure, the public has had enough, and they're on the way out the door.
To that last point, when you look at the politics in Germany, when you look at the politics in France, there are a number of other countries in Europe where it appears as though, because of the recent failures of the left, as they deem it, there is now greater support for right-wing movements to come in and claim, you see what the left did? We're the ones with the answers. So there's a growing popularity of right-leaning candidates. Do you agree with that? And if so, do you see that as a potential problem?
I do. I think it's undeniable that what is often referred to as the populist right in the West is in the ascendancy. And the left, what traditionally has been regarded as the left, is in real trouble. Has been for some time, but now it's fallen to the level of almost a fringe movement within Western politics. To the extent that these populist parties are, and I have my reservations as a leftist that this is in fact the case, but to the extent that they are going to de-escalate tensions and pursue a policy of peaceful coexistence with the West's economic and political and military rivals, then their coming to power will be a good thing. If, in fact, that's what they're going to do. And some of them, for example, the AfD, vis-a-vis Russia, are definitely trying to convince the public that that's where we're heading. But on matters of, for example, economic management, I have very serious concerns about this. I think at the end of the day, they may well pursue policies that are going to strengthen and enrich the elites at the expense of the general population.
Dmitry Leskaris, thank you so much for your time. Greatly, greatly appreciate that analysis. We look forward to having you back.
I'll be happy to be back. Thank you.
Thank you. Folks, you're listening to The Critical Hour on Radio Sputnik. I'm Wilmer Leon, joined here by my co-host, Garland Nixon. There's more on the other side. Stay tuned.